When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Sesame Bison Encarta.
That's awesome, man.
Thanks.
That's a very, very great name. So,
SBE, yep.
Yep. This is going to be the first episode in a new series that I've named the Arcade Movie Reviews. So, where we take a look at movies based on video games. Based on video games.
A movie video game, or rather a video game movie.
You know, because there's been so many great ones.
Oh, like Mortal Kombat Annihilation? So, I mean, totally.
Yeah.
Or Double Dragon?
There's been so many bad ones. There's very few good ones.
A few good ones, but it's...
Very few. Yes. Today we are covering Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. Yes. A movie that came out in the year 2009 of our Lord. And
of our Lord Bison.
Yes. It was a PG-13 film. It was an hour and 36 minutes, but it felt like about 5 days long. Yeah.
I literally had to watch it in 3 sessions.
I don't blame you.
Because it was so boring.
It was directed by Andrzej.
Okay.
Bartkowiak. He's a Polish man with a very Polish name. So,
yeah.
Just that I, unfortunately, as an American, cannot pronounce. So,
right, boy.
Yeah. No. I'm a white boy.
No, Polish is, like, notoriously, like, hard, like...
To pronounce.
Like, all the European languages, it's, like, seen as, like, one of the most difficult. Because, like, none of the words or none of the letters, like, are pronounced how they actually read. Like, you know what I mean? Like...
So this guy started out as a cinematographer, and he was like the director of photography for movies such as Trespass, 13 Days, Lethal Weapon 4, U.S. Marshals, The Devil's Advocate, Dante's Peak, Jade, Species, some decent movies that Speed,
okay,
Falling Down, Twins, Princey's Honor, The Verdict, a lot of really good movies. He was the
That's like a pretty decent resume right there. Like,
yeah, he was around. These were him as the cinematographer, not the director.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, but you think being on those films, he may have learned something.
Yeah.
Nothing against him. As far as his directing output goes, Romeo Must Die is one of his movies, which is a decent movie.
Yeah.
Exit Wounds with Steven Seagal. Cradle to the Grave. Doom, another video game movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
With The Rock. Yeah.
And then, like, more recently, he's done some movies called Maximum Impact and Dead Reckoning that I'm not familiar with. So.
Yeah, either my.
Yeah. Anyways, and it was written by Justin Marks, Takashi Nishiyama, and Hiroshi Mastromoro. But mainly Justin Marks. I think the other people are just credited because they created the characters.
Okay.
So, for the video game. So, yeah.
Hey.
But Justin Marks, who has written this, The Jungle Book, and the story for Top Gun Maverick.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so.
He's really moved up.
Yeah, he wrote that. It was the Jungle Book, the live action remake that came out in 2016. Yeah. So
okay, not the cartoon or
anything. Yeah, but even that is better than Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li. Yeah. So
okay. I mean, I think anything might be at this point, but
yeah. We've watched a lot of movies, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again for other movies. This is quite possibly the worst film I have ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not one of these movies that is, like, so bad it's good. It's just there.
Yeah, it's the boredom factor. It's,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's bad in ways that you wouldn't really necessarily... Yeah. Think it's just one of those movies that just nothing happens. It's just like it's basically like how you always mention, where it's like, if you have to tell the audience what's going on, then you're not really doing a good job. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, here's a train coming, or like, you know what I mean, or something like that. Like,
yeah, like, you know, where you're basically spelling out what's happening, spelling out the narrative. When you're telling and not showing.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So So what were your thoughts on this?
It's just boring. I didn't like it. I mean, I love Street Fighter. That's, you know, one of my favorite games of all time. Mm-hmm. Street Fighter 2. And the reason why it's called Street Fighter 2 is a whole history behind.
Oh, yeah.
There actually is an original Street Fighter arcade game.
Yeah, it's
and
a lot different you could than also, the other. Yeah.
You could also play it on the, not Nintendo, one of the old video game systems. Sega Master System, I think, and there was another, I can't think of the name, whatever. And then, you know, Street Fighter 2 comes out, and it's just one, it's like one of the most iconic fighting video games of all time. It really is. And then, you know, so I'm like, oh, and Chun-Li, you know, it's one of my favorite characters, you know, because basically she was hot, you know, and it was like, you know, like, yeah, oh, yeah, you know, and, you know, stuff like that, you know, yeah, hot cartoon character, whatever, sue me. But like, you know, I was like 10 at the time, you know.
I mean, when I was a kid, I had a crush on Judy Judson. So, I mean, come on, we'll just.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, exactly. And so, you know, and the same with Street Fighter 2. And, like, I know, like, the million add-ons, like, Street Fighter 2 Ultra, Ultra HD, Ultra Max, or whatever, like, they didn't really have, like, a plot. It was just, like, it was, like, basically, like, a tournament, like, Mortal Kombat. It's pretty much, like, similar, although it doesn't have any, like, supernatural stuff to it. And then, there was like just loose stories around each character that didn't really, like, they really weren't fleshed out really that much.
Yeah.
But then, so you can't really base a movie after Chun-Li or Ryu or Ken, because there's really not much to go off of. So they just like, all right, we'll just construct a plot around her and just,
yeah, I mean, and it's not a, it's not a bad day, a bad idea. I mean, it's like, you know, but they failed at it all. So
yeah, you know, exactly.
Yeah. So in the cast here, we've got Kristen Crook from, Smallville as Chun-Li. She played, Lana Lang on there. We've got, you know, just letting you know, she's not the, she's not the, the cult member, cast member. So, Smallville. We've got Neil McDonough as M. Bison.
Yep.
Well,
Damian Dark.
Yeah. So we have two DC comic book characters.
Yep.
And yep. then we have Chris Klein, who played Cicada on Flash. So we got a third one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot about Cicada.
Yeah, he's Charlie Nash. Then we got Michael Clark Duncan, who is in a Marvel movie as Kingpin. So
Well, really, which one?
Daredevil.
Saw that one.
With the one with Ben Affleck. I'm really weird. Most people hate that movie. I really like it. So,
well, because don't you have a good experience from watching that movie or something? Or
no, I just really liked the movie. I showed it at UT once when I at the University of Toledo.
That's right. Yeah.
When I was the president of the Film and Video Society.
That's right.
But yeah, the
a DC and Marvel character, because Ben Affleck played Batman in
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have been in both. We got an actress named Moon Bloodgood as Detective. Chris Klein was Charlie Nash. We got Michael Clark Duncan as Barlog. Balrog. I'm sorry.
He's one of the characters in the game too.
Yeah, he is. He's, and then we've got Charlie Nash. I don't believe is a character. Oh wait, he is in the game actually.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yeah. He's like a minor character. Moon Bloodgood is a character named Detective Maya Sunny. Sunny Sunny, I don't know. We got Tab.
What's that name?
Yeah.
She should just use a real name. Moon Bloodgood. That's a great name.
I know it is.
Great name.
We've got Taboo from the Black Eyed Peas as Vega.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we got Robin Sho as Gen, a martial arts master. He also was in Mortal Kombat, the movie.
Okay.
And Mortal Kombat Annihilation as Liu Kang. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's done two video game movies or series. Yeah. He was also in Beverly Hills Ninja with
That's Chris
Farley.
Right. Yes. Chris, yes. Yes.
And the character he's playing, I'll get into it more later, but it's supposed to be like an old man.
Yeah.
He was like 49 when he did this movie.
Oh,
and
wow.
they gave him like really gray hair, but it looked like somebody had just put like spray paint on his hair. And,
yeah, it looks very
it's bad. Yeah, it was not good at all. Okay, but anyways, there's other people in the movie, but what happens in this movie here?
Basically, what happens in this movie could be like said in like 3 minutes. Between all of the filler. So Chun-Li's dad is like some business person. They don't really explain what he does necessarily, but it's probably criminal, I guess. I don't know. And then he wants her to become a piano player, so he pretty much like forces her to practice all the time. But then she gets into martial arts. Then he teaches her stuff, and then Bison and Balrog and Bison break into their house one night, get into a huge fight with them, and then they basically kidnap her dad, and then Bison acts really creepy towards the 10-year-old Chun-Li.
Yeah.
And then says something like we won't hurt the schoolgirl or something, like,
yeah,
strokes or some shit like that, I remember. And it was like, I don't understand, like, the whole school, like, why was that a thing? Like I don't understand, like, why, I don't know why she was referred to as the schoolgirl. Like, why
I think
not
she was
just,
wearing a school uniform at the point. Oh,
okay,
something.
I That's see, probably, I, all right.
Yeah,
I was trying to figure out, like, what
yeah.
the, why that meant anything, whatever.
Not that I'm giving anything of any of the writing of the script any kind of credit, but.
Yeah, exactly. I think they were just being stupid, I don't know. And then, yeah. So, you know, him and Ball, and this thing, Balrog is basically, like, super strong, and, like, nothing really, like, hurts him.
Yeah.
Like, martial arts don't really do much to him because he's just, like, huge, and he's got, you know, his muscles are, like, you know. He's basically can, like, lift a car that's, like, his strength or whatever. And so, you know, he loses the fight against Balrog, and then they kidnap him. And, you know, they think maybe he's dead, you know, or something implied that he might be dead or whatever. And then it, like, goes up, like, maybe, like, 8 years later or something like that, and Chun-Li is, like, at a, like, some kind of prestigious, well, no, she's, like a concert pianist.
Yeah, she's a concert pianist. She's, like, really good at the piano, yeah. And her,
and so,
and her mom's dying of cancer.
That's right. So her mom's dying, and then she ends up getting this, like, she gets a bunch of, like, flowers, like, you know, they do to give people, and then, like, this, someone sends her, like, this scroll with, like, ancient, like, lettering and stuff that she can't make out, and then, like, she ends up, like, taking it somewhere, or someone's in, like, well, no, basically, it's, like, she's, like, kind of, like, being, like, steered towards, like, this particular shop, like, in the city.
Yeah.
I think it was Bangkok.
Yeah.
Is that where Chick-fil-A? Yeah. And then, like, this older woman, like, reads her the script and tells her, like, what, you know, she needs to do is she needs to, like, do something, go to Bangkok or do something. I remember it, something like that. And then, so, like, yeah, she visits her mom. Mom dies. And then she basically leaves to go basically live on the streets for some reason.
Yeah, I don't mean, know. It's like she wants to play homeless woman for a few days.
I don't understand. I mean, she sounds like she comes from money. So
yeah,
I don't
she's
know,
rich. She has a fucking mansion.
So I don't know exactly what that's about. But so mm-hmm. yeah, she was like basically living on the streets for a while, trying to find Gen. And then Gen is like always been like watching out for her this whole time. Like these guys are beating them up on the train station and she went to help them out. And then he was also like sweeping the street, and now he like bumped into her, and that's what led her into that shop.
Yeah, and he has a spider web tattoo.
Yeah, they got that. Yeah, so it's like basically it's like this whole like journey thing where they're like trying to nudge her. And that, you know, you seem like that would be like a decent plot, but it just kind of goes nowhere from there, basically.
Yeah, I mean, like, so far, what we've got here, it starts out, there's a lot of narration in this movie too at different points that I think was an afterthought.
Yeah, probably.
Because I think what happened is they probably had some test audiences that had no clue what the fuck was going on.
Exactly.
And they're like, hey, let's bring Kristen back in and have her record some narration so people know what the fuck's going on. That's what I'm thinking
happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but in the narration, she talks about, at this time in my life, I didn't know who I was going to be. And it's like, okay. That implies that we're going to have a movie with character development.
Yeah, exactly.
Something that we don't have in this movie at all for any of the characters.
No, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So, yeah.
There's absolutely no, not even close.
She's the same person that she was when she was playing piano towards the beginning of the movie at the end of the movie. So, anyways, we've got like, I'm going to focus on her story first. Okay, okay. So we've got...
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, if that's okay with you. We basically have her trying to rescue her dad. who's being kept captive in some kind of basement place where it looks like he's taken care of pretty well.
Oh yeah, I mean he looks
by
like
Bison.
He's...
Yeah, doing stuff for him that's never really explained.
Nope, not what?
Some stuff on the computer of some sort. You
not
know?
Once. Did it, yeah, we don't know if he was like a shady businessman himself. There's never any
no,
like implication. Like you sort of maybe, but they don't really at all. It's weird for a movie that's full of narration. They have like nothing like on this. Like
it's got tons of narration, but no plot. But yeah, or no details to the plot at least.
Yeah,
we have we have one point where Bison kills all of his, like, rivals for some reason, never explained. And it doesn't apply to the rest of the plot of the movie.
Nope.
I don't know if it was just there to show how bad he was or what, you know?
It was just a one-off, yeah.
Yeah. Because there was nobody that we gave a shit about that he killed. There was... You know, like, gave a shit one way or the other. Like, nobody we hated or liked that was killed. They were only on screen for, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, they're only in one scene. Basically, is that he was a bunch of crime families that worked together, and he wanted to take over. Basically, was like, you can either join me or we're just going to kill you, you know, type of thing. So,
yeah.
You know.
But there's no reason. It's not like, oh... Because I need to take over the town because I've got to, you know, get the who's a what's it from the,
yeah,
from you guys because you guys have control of the who's a what's it, you know. There's nothing like that.
There's no. Anyway, I'll get to Bison later on or something because that's a whole other story. You know?
Yeah, we can go more into Bison, but anyway, so okay. My thing is there are two movies here.
Yeah,
one movie. Is about this guy, Charlie Nash, catching up with this Detective Maya and looking into this character named Bison. All of their scenes could be excised from this movie and the plot would be the same.
Mm-hmm.
What little of the plot there is. There was no need for them to be in the movie. It's kind of like when we watched our friend's movie, the Reconciler, when you had that whole plot about the woman interviewing people that had nothing to do with the rest of the story.
All right, yeah.
Yeah. All the scenes with Charlie and Maya have nothing to do with the rest of the story. They at least kind of connect, but it's like...
Well, they only connect insofar as, you know, he's looking for Bison and trying to track or whatever, but that's it.
It was filler.
Yeah.
So basically, I don't know. I'll go into them first, and then we can go back to our title character,
our hero.
Yeah, you can call her that, I guess. So we've got basically this kind of like will they, won't they thing going on between you know, sexual tension between Maya and Charlie.
But it starts immediately after they meet.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds in. Like,
I mean, a lot of this just seems like something like, okay, I'm not trying to say anything bad necessarily about like the Arrowverse or something like that. But this feels like scenes out of Arrowverse TV shows.
Yeah.
But not from the first episode. From like an episode like, you know, 10 episodes in.
Yeah.
That's what the writing of the characters feel like. Like, we're supposed to know, oh, you know, hey, it's good old Charlie Nash, you know, our friend. But no, we just met him. We have no detail about him. We don't know anything about him. We don't know if he's, you know, been a cop for 4 days or 40 years. You know, we don't know anything about him. It's like... same thing with Maya, you know, and all we know is like their positions and their names, you know. It's like, I don't know, and they're trying to play off like Chris Klein's a good actor. But I think to his detriment, this movie, the writing is horrible. It sounds like it was written by a ChatGPT.
It does.
And or like I was saying, like some of his dialogue is like anytime he's I was telling you this earlier off air, like whenever he signs off on the walkie-talkie, he's like, "Nash out."
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like a 9-year-old playing cop in your backyard.
Yeah.
It's what it is. It's like, you know, nobody actually does that.
Like over and out, you know, whatever. Like...
Yeah. I mean, the only people that ever like signed on and off are like, you know, I don't know, like Smokey and the Bandit on their CBs or something. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. And to the detriment of all of the actors in this movie, most of the dialogue in this movie was dubbed.
Oh, was it?
Because it just did not sound natural to the locations where they were. I don't think they got good audio on set.
So they
brought people back in to loop their dialogue.
Gotcha.
And,
okay.
So it sounds kind of hollow. And it almost sounds like, yeah. I don't know, it just doesn't sound natural.
Well, I kind of like that one movie we watched, was it Attack of the Killer Computer? What was it called before that? It was, it had a name before that. It was,
I vaguely remember that movie, but yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
But
yeah.
They were dubbed too, pretty much.
Yeah. And this wasn't quite as bad as that, but it was.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
It's pretty obvious that they brought them in to dub all the dialogue again because they couldn't get good audio on set.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, but basically their whole story is just basically coming in and out of the other story, but not really interacting much with Chun-Li or anything. So, yeah. I don't know. If you want to take over and give more of the details. Yeah, what were you saying? I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I'll help out with that. But, yeah, it's like three separate stories that, like, barely intersect with each other. Like, it's they're barely tied to each other at all. And so, yeah, you got the Chun-Li is, like, basically, like, being trained to be kind of like a spy. But they don't really go into that either. Like when Gen's like teaching her how to like do like basically like magic with her fighting skills or something like that. And then like at one point she's like going to like a club and like somehow she just happens to know that the woman who's like, I guess like Bison's right hand woman is a lesbian or bisexual, which there was no. Like, how did she know this? It was never explained, you know?
Yeah, that whole scene. So, okay, here's the thing. You have the woman as a lesbian. This is me looking at it from, like, you know, I don't know, as film criticism here. There's a thing in film called the gaze. It's usually the male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
G-A-Z-E, not G-A-Y-S.
Right.
Just making sure.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah. Because we're talking about a lesbian, so I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, but basically, you know, it's usually the male gaze where you'll have a thing where you've got like your hero or your villain kind of looking over at a hot girl, and
right,
and you can do the pan up and down of the woman's body or whatever have you. That's not necessarily that happened a lot in the 80s and stuff like that. So. We're hitting 2009 here with this movie where there's a little bit more, you know, sensitivity when it comes to things like that. So the way they can get around that is make it through the eyes of a lesbian character.
Right. Exactly.
Which doesn't they think it makes it better.
It does. They do think that. Yeah. They're like, it's okay, guys. Like,
but it doesn't. Yeah. It's still just putting your cameras on women dancing.
Yeah.
In a sexual manner to, you know, get your little 13-year-old boys excited about the movie.
Yeah. Which, though, know, I'm not even sure if that would even happen just because of how stupid the movie is.
Yeah, but... I honestly think most 13-year-old boys would be checked out by this point in the movie. So,
well, because there's nothing going on. It's just... And, you could also make the argument that, like, well, you know, her character is kind of a slimy person, so therefore that's something that she would do, you know, whatever. But, like...
I mean, it's kind of like the whole thing, like, I mean, the glorified rape scene in a movie, too, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
God.
Where people do that, like, oh, we had to show that to show how evil the guy was. No, you didn't. No. You could have it talked about, honestly. But, yeah, that's the sort of thing, you know.
Honestly, yeah. I've only felt comfortable with sex scenes in general in movies. I don't think they're useful at all. I don't think there's any point. It doesn't do anything for the story.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
But especially rape scenes are even way worse.
I think scenes where you have somebody like kiss somebody or even implying that they're going to have sex are okay. But but like a blatant like sex scene in a movie, I've never understood the point of.
It's just
because it never moves the plot forward.
No, it's just a way to kind of attract the adults.
Yeah.
You know, it's a plain softcore pornography essentially in a movie theater. Yeah. I don't know. But like, so, you know, Chun-Li is like seducing her with her eyes and, you know, kind of flirts with her a little bit and dance more, and then she kind of like teases her and then kind of just walks away. And then she kind of looks back and like kind of motions her head to go upstairs with her. So the woman follows her into the bathroom, and then Chun-Li starts fighting her, and it turns into this whole fight scene and whatever, fine. And then Chun-Li barely wins the fight, which is weird because she's supposed to be like this super martial artist, and the other woman, I don't think she was even like knew that much, but she was able to almost like hold her own against Chun-Li, which is okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like another thing too with her being bad and being a lesbian too. It's the whole basic instinct sort of thing where you perpetuate the lesbian as the evil person. You know, it's just
right, like, because she's like aggressive and. Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I've seen that in a lot of movies, too, where it's, like, you can't just have, like, a bad female character just, like, be a bad female character. She's always gonna be bisexual or lesbian or trans, even.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like, okay, like, we get it. Like, come on. And then, Chun-Li wins that fight. She gets the information out of her because she's gonna break her arm and she didn't tell. And then Bison just appears like to beat the other living shit out of her, which is weird because like we got a man just like totally wailing on a woman who's like, you know, like tied up like with a rope and shit. I'm like,
see, I was under the impression that she was already dead and he was just beating on her like punching her. Yeah, okay, I think he was just using her as a punching bag.
Oh my, well, that's even worse.
That's even creepier, but that's the way I read it. So
wow, that's like way worse. Yeah. So you know, she's goner now, and then we get into the Bison story, which is again like almost separate from the Chun-Li story, in that there's this weird thing where Bison essentially wants to like buy the neighborhood that he grew up in, but then like wants to like gentrify it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he likes it being the slums because he grew up in the slums.
Yeah. But in this incarnation of Bison, unlike the Raul Julia, you know, like, I don't know, like, guy wearing military garb in the first Street Fighter movie, you know, and in the video game, he's like the orphan of some Irish people that were living in Hong Kong or wherever, or Bangkok or whatever. Yeah, and so he was Irish. He's got this. I mean, I've actually heard Neil McDonough do a good Irish accent. Not so much in this movie. And I don't know if that was because of the dubbing of his dialogue or whatever, but it was just like this, I don't know, if he was just trying to do like a slight Irish accent with some kind of like, you know, Bangkok accent like mixed in there or something.
Right. I didn't even notice he was doing an accent, actually.
He was. It was off-putting to me. So, yeah.
I wasn't even paying attention.
He's like I guess an orphan who was like raised there or something. So yeah.
He was an orphan because his parents died when he was really young, and I guess like he just wasn't sent back to where he lives for some reason, and I don't know like how that would happen, but okay. So then, like he said something like, "I made my decision around her age," talking about Chun-Li. No, some kid who was like, because after he bought the neighborhood, he pretty much just like cornered them all off, basically. And then, like, one of the kids was like staring at him through the car window, and he was like, "I was around his age when I made my decision of what kind of person I was going to be," or something like that. And of course, like, he was going to be a bad person, which is weird. Like, why would you make a decision when you're 10 years old of whether you're going to be a bad person? I don't know. And then,
Well,
and so, like,
there was that day that I had in social studies class when I was in
yeah,
when I
you
was in
just like had.
grade school, where the teacher is like, "Okay, class, today we get to decide if we're going to be good or bad people."
Yeah, totally. I mean, it makes total sense. But no, I mean, so, and then they get into this weird backstory where, it just shows him kind of growing up, where he's like stealing things to get by, and but he's still like sort of a good person. Like, he kind of feels a little guilty about the bad things he does, but he doesn't want to feel guilty because he wants to continue building his empire. So then he has this wife and he takes her into a cave, and there's like some ritual where if he like transfers like what little goodness he has in his soul into his child, then like that means that he doesn't have any goodness anymore, so he could just be a bad person
And
and
he has
just do a big
no like
thing.
conscience, like, and
And so he kills his wife by like sticking his hands into her
yeah,
belly,
he
essentially.
basically rips his kid out of her. It's
Yeah.
like,
Yeah. And then, which I, again, with the whole narration thing, I didn't know if his wife knew that was going on, because it seemed like the cave already had like a bunch of like ritualistic shit in it. So I think she would have like questioned, like, why is there like candles and shit in here? Like,
it's like, "Gal, it's time to give birth to the baby. We could
and
go over
so,
we could go over to the hospital, or we can go to this weird cave,
so yeah, so I wasn't sure if she was in on it, like she knew that she was going to be like a sacrificial lamb type figure, or if she didn't know, who knows? Again, they didn't explain any of this stuff. And then, so then, like, that's his thing that allows him to just basically like just do bad shit. He doesn't feel bad about it, but then at the same time he does, because like he was supposed to basically just like abandon the daughter and just like let basically like just let her go, so he didn't have to worry about like. But then like he wanted her back anyway, so I don't know. And then but they didn't really explain that too well either. And
I mean,
then
they
so
didn't
that's
get
like
they
the
didn't give
MacGuffin of the movie is her, like, and
they didn't give I mean, and she's called the White Rose.
that's right, the White Rose,
Yeah,
yeah.
and he didn't give I mean, there was no reasoning that he wanted her back. It wasn't like even like, "Oh, I want her because she's my blood and I need her to fulfill this destiny or something." They gave
Right.
no reason whatsoever. And it's not like
Yeah.
he took all of the good out of him. And I always associate love with good. So
Yeah.
it's not like he pretended to love her, or at least said he loved her. So I'm confused. So if all the good was taken out of him, how can he feel love? It's just
You
bad.
know, exactly.
It's
It's just
bad
weird.
writing.
No, it is. It's terrible writing. It really was. And see, it's too, when I first, my first thought was way darker when I first saw her, because she was Russian. It
Yeah.
sounded like she was speaking Russian, and she was in like a train car. And my first thought was, oh my God, Bison is human trafficking people.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was thinking, because he has no conscience, so I thought that was like one of his, enterprises, or whatever. But then it was like, oh no, she's his daughter, and for some reason she's there.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then and at first I was wondering if she even like had like a personality, or if she was literally just kind of like a vessel for his goodness. Like, she didn't even have like a, like, you know what I mean? Like, she was just like a human body that didn't really have like her own thoughts, kind of thing. I don't know. It was just weird. It didn't make any sense. Or, the plot would have been kind of cooler if he like wanted his goodness back, and then she could like transfer it to him and it'd be like her own person. And then he would like feel guilty about all the shit he did. No, nothing like that. You know, but there is one scene though. Like, so I remember this movie reminds me a lot of like the 90s, like martial arts movies, even though it was made in 2009. Yeah. And one of the things that they did was, so I don't know if you remember this, like 90s action movies had what I describe as two main things. One thing, almost every action movie with guns, there's at least one gun with a silencer, has to be requirement.
Yeah.
You watch old 90s movies with guns, it's like silencers all over the place. Like, I don't know why they thought that was a cool thing, but it's like every, like all the James Bond movies, all of the, and another thing is,
it's because of the sound, it's the
pew, pew, it's pew, pew. Yeah. It's like, it's got like a little, like cute little sound, like, pew. And then, and another thing is that they were obsessed with killing people by breaking their necks. Like, almost every 90s and 80s movie with martial arts, people were just breaking necks, like, all over the place. And, like, that stopped for a while. And then this movie, though, they bring it back where he kills Chun-Li's father in front of her by breaking his neck.
Yeah,
which
is pretty
traumatic.
I know in the mythos of the video game, supposedly she's actually an Interpol agent who in the video game world who has been trying to revenge the death of her father. So that sets her forward. So as an origin story, that's cool. But the fact is, they built this whole thing up to being like the thing she wanted to do, like her goal to accomplish in this thing was to save her father.
Right.
But then we get them together and they only interact with each other for 30 seconds and he dies.
Exactly. And then,
yeah, it just seemed really anticlimactic.
And then, so third story, I gotta say his line. I just remember. So when Nash is narrating, about Bison, like, you know, he's traveled to like three continents, and then at one point he turns away from Maya. It's almost like he's looking directly into the camera, although he's not, and he goes, "He walks through raindrops," or something like that. It's like the worst line of a movie ever. Like, and like, you can almost see the look on his face where he's like almost cringing as he's saying it, like, "God damn it, they're gonna make me say this." Like, Chris Klein.
See, I know Chris Klein at one point had I think a drug and alcohol problem in his real life.
Okay.
Makes me wonder if this was during that point.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
He's like, he walks through raindrops or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, to show how sneaky he is, I guess. I don't know. And then, yeah, so you got that going on. For some reason, there's this whole thing where Bison's people don't know Chris Klein, Nash exists, nor Maya. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Nash thinks that he has to, like, make out with Maya in the car while they're stakeouting them for some reason. And then, like, that's supposed to be, like, their big first point of, like, sexual tension or whatever. And it was just, whatever. It was just stupid. And then,
yeah, this was during his time with his alcohol problems.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was first arrested for drunk driving in 2005, and then again in 2010. So like, this was right in between that. So yeah. So
okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. It was just bizarre, man. I don't know. And like, yeah, the Nash story is useless. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't do anything from the story at all. I mean, the Chun-Li story barely has anything to do with the Chun-Li story anyway. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, like, it's just like
this so was more end, this was more a movie about Bison.
It was like Bison's origin story. Yeah, yeah. More than anyone else's, because we got the whole goodness soul transferish weird thing going on, and then for some reason he wants his daughter back for no particular reason whatsoever, and then we have the big battle scenes. Gen. They thought they killed Gen, but he turned out to be alive. He kills Balrog by like electrocuting him, I guess, or something. I don't remember. And then Vega dies somehow. I forgot how. And then Vega was like one of my favorite characters in the game, and he was so stupid in this movie. He was useless.
She kicked his ass like right away.
Yeah, it was like
And I don't think that was the actor's real voice was Taboo's real voice, because it sounded like it was dubbed. Like,
okay,
if it is, I don't know if Taboo's voice is really that deep, but it just seemed it sounded like they took his voice and like ran it through some kind of machine or something.
Yeah, it was very robotic sounding. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so Vega, she pretty much makes short work of him in the beginning and in the end, and then she ends up defeating Bison with the help of Gen, and then like that's when she starts doing like her special moves that you could do in the video game, which they didn't explain how she was able to like have like these magic powers all of a sudden.
It's just something that happens, I guess.
And then so she, to put it lightly, murders Bison in front of his like 10-year-old daughter. And like there's like she's not
older than 10.
Well, whatever. I don't know. She's a kid, who knows? But whatever. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Whatever. He kills her in front of her child, you know, like, I mean, you know, who's obviously like still really young, and that's traumatizing.
Oh yeah.
And then like she does it by like literally like jumping and breaking his neck, but like with her legs, and he's like, she's like already like 50 feet above him, because he's like laying on some kind of like steel beam or something.
Yeah,
his head's kind of hanging off it, and she jumps down and like spins her legs and then cracks his neck with her legs, which I would think would have just tore his head off mainly, but like I don't know. And then she's not even arrested for murdering someone. Like, they're no, like,
Charlie, like, lets her go.
It. The police watch her murder this guy who's no longer a physical threat to her, and they're just like, eh, you know?
But Charlie, like, basically, the other police are coming, and Charlie's the only one that really saw it.
Oh, okay.
So he's, like, kind of like, get out of here, kid, you know, sort of thing.
And but he's an accomplice murder, okay.
Yeah, cool. He's an accomplice. And, so then we have, like, this, tacked on scene where she's moving back into her mansion, you know, because she didn't learn anything. And and then Gen shows up again. Pun intended.
Again. Get it? Again. Yeah.
And basically kind of sets up a sequel that we never saw. And
yeah, exactly, about Ryu. Like, all right, we're gonna get Ryu. No.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Street Fighter could be turned into a good movie. It just hasn't happened yet, so.
Yeah, I mean, you got Chun-Li, you know, again, she's an Interpol agent. That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah.
You got Ken and Ryu. They both have, like, the same powers. It looks like they're both trained by the same person, so that would be a cool story to go on, because they literally have the same exact, like, they're just, like, an even match for each other, you know? They, you know, they got the same Hayuka, they got the same spin kick going on. You know, Ryu just wears a white robe and Ken wears a red one, you know, and but yeah, there's no Ken. I thought maybe at first I thought Nash was Ken. I'm like, oh that's kinda cool. Like, no. No, why would they do that, you know? So
yeah, it's like there is a yeah, there is, like, right now, they're in talks to make another Street Fighter movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, Legendary Entertainment is in process of... They announced... Okay. They acquired the film and TV rights to Street Fighter franchise.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Danny and Michael Philippo are in talks to direct a film. They directed the movie Talk to Me. So yeah, don't know of anything else they've done, but anyways, they
any other thoughts here? No. Not really.
Yeah, I mean, my main thing about the takeaway from this is that, okay, the dialogue was horrible. The acting could have been better. The directing was pretty bad. The editing was horrible. The pacing of everything was horrible. Like, they would cut from, like, something kind of slow to something fast and then back to... it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There was no good pacing at all. And there was no good pacey either. I mean, you need to have, like, Joshua Jackson in there.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, no.
Yeah, no good pacing.
Yeah.
Well.
But yeah, that I don't know. I was reading... Wikipedia under reception, like, you know, they talk about like reviews and stuff in there. Film historian Leonard Maltin stated the 1994 picture was one of the worst movies ever inspired by a video game. Even Jean-Claude Van Damme fans couldn't rationalize this turkey, which should have been titled, 400 Funerals and No Sex. I don't know why you call it that, but anyways, because it came out the same year as Four Weddings and a Funeral or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yet this pointless and inept action vehicle makes its predecessor seem like Gone with the Wind. hopelessly contrived with lamely choreographed fight sequences. Highlight is Chris Klein's cry of "Bomb! Get out now!" Our sentiments exactly.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah.
Yeah. So the movie was a bomb in his opinion. Yeah. Oh boy. My other thing, you know, Nash out. You know, yeah, get out of there.
Yeah.
Oh my god, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and this guy Ryan Davis of Giant Bomb described it as a re-envisioning of the source material by people who can't see.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
Yeah. And, and then people are talking about, like, you know, Justin Mark's solemn screenplay lacks any trace of wit. Like, it just doesn't have it. Yeah, I mean, on its surface... you could get, I mean, because if you look at like some modern like action films, like Marvel ones especially, sometimes the plot is really kind of thin. But it's the dialogue that make it worth watching, you know? It's just like, this didn't even have that, you know? So.
Yeah, like I was watching Shazam Fury of the Gods last night. I didn't watch the whole thing, but like, there was like, you know, these funny little juxtapositions here and there where it was like, you know, like, we gotta save the bridge, and then it's like bridge collapses or something like that in a newspaper or whatever, like
things
like that. No,
yeah, it's yeah, I don't know. Anyways, this movie hurt my soul.
Yeah,
for the fact that I mean, it was it had a $50 million budget.
What?
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah, 50, oh, 50 million.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. And it only made 12.8 at the box office.
So did all that money go to Bison or something? I mean, like, what the hell? Like,
I mean, honestly, nobody in this movie was a big star. I mean, they're known for things, but like, but like Chris Klein is like the. You know, part of an ensemble in American Pie. He's not like the lead, you know. That's like more like Jason Biggs or something. But
yeah, he was in all movies. He was in all. I mean,
Neil McDonough has always been a good supporting actor.
Yeah.
And Kristen Crook wasn't the star of Smallville. She was the co-star, but I mean, you know, it's like she was a TV star at the time. And that was still in 2009, we were still at the point where TV people were looked down upon.
Right.
You know, it's. You know, Michael, honestly, probably the biggest star in this movie at this point was Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing, too. I was surprised. I'm like, why is he in this movie? Like, it was just... Again, he was acting so stupid.
I mean, before this, he had already been in Scorpion King and Sin City, yep. and you know, the whole nine yards, and not to mention you know the Green Mile.
I know that's a huge movie.
I wouldn't be surprised if half that budget went to him. So.
It might have been. Just have his name. But then again,
the thing is, he's not even. Like, I mean, I saw one movie poster where he's kind of on it, but the major like covers for the DVD and other things, he's not even on them.
They should have made him the main character.
Yeah,
but then again, Balrog is not really a main character in the game, where he's not the most popular. So then, what they should have done is they wanted to make an action movie with Michael Clark Duncan. They should have just. You know, made an act, you know, not done a Street Fighter game. You know?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, a Street Fighter movie, sorry. And,
yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Because, yeah, Balrog is really not like. Most people don't really like to play as him because he's a boxer. He's not really.
Yeah, he's kind of a B level character.
Like Chun Li, he's got the cool kick moves.
Yeah.
Now, Ryu and Ken got that cool Hayuken kind of thing. You got the Russian dude who's like a huge, you know, like big guy or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
You got Vega because Vega climb on fences and shit. He's got those spiky things on his hands or whatever. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know what they were thinking with this movie. The concept could have been done well if you had a decent story. Like, you know, give me a week or so and I could write you a better story.
I'm sure of
a backstory for Chun-Li than this. But I don't want to waste my time doing that.
They already tried it once. I wouldn't mind seeing another movie about Chun-Li, though.
Well, yeah.
A good movie,
though. Honestly, like, I think Street Fighter could make a good TV series.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, like where you could like focus on the characters more in depth and do things, you know, like, you know, you just like a large ensemble cast where you could, you know, give a little bit of backstory, like one episode's about, you know, one character, or next episode's about another character, you know, sort of things like that. It'd be interesting. But anyways, I think that's about all we have to say about that, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty much spent.
Yeah, me too. So, anyways, folks, hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you're good to each other. Check out our TeePublic, our Patreon. Go to all2real2.com for all of our links and everything. Be sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Share it with your friends. You know, give us a review if you feel like it. Any of that stuff if you feel like it. I'm not telling you what to do. Like I said, be good to each other. Remember that I love you. Sesame loves you. Mike out.
Yeah, that's me over.
Yeah. And until next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.